Rudolf Hess, E.N. Fleming, Thelemah SS Religion. In 1907, Aleister Crowley and George Cecil Jones established the AA Magical Order, claiming authority from secret chiefs after the breakdown of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. The Latin Argentium Astrum has frequently been claimed as the proper name of the AA Order. However, according to the author James Eshelman, this Latin translation of the phrase Silver Star is not the correct name. Eshelman gives the factual name of the order as Astron Argon. A variant on this Greek is Aster Argos, also a correct Greek rendering of the word Silver Star. Eshelman stated, Sirius commonly is held to be the physical expression of that Silver Star after which the order is named. The AA is subdivided into three orders, the SS, being the governing body, third order, and comprising those grades that are above the abyss, the RRETAC, second order, comprising those degrees that are below the abyss but above the veil of Paroketh, and the Golden Dawn, first order, comprising the grades below the veil of Paroketh. Wikipedia.org. Crowley claimed that the Silver Star, SS, was his grand occult school, in succession to the mission of Muhammad. Members had to acknowledge the authority of the Beast 666 and the Scarlet Woman. Essentially, the peak mode of attainment was Ipsissimus, beyond the awareness of the lower degrees. An Ipsissimus is free from limitations and necessity and lives in perfect balance with the manifest universe. This grade is difficult to render directly to English, but it is quintessentially the best of self, translating more or less to his most selfness, or self-est beyond the word and the fool, Crowley wrote, the Ipsissimus should keep the achievement of this final grade secret even from the rest of the order and continue with the work of the Magus, while expressing the nature of an Ipsissimus in word and deed. His legacy as the Magus was set in motion after a 1904 museum visit in Egypt with his wife Rose Kelly. Crowley was attracted to an ancient Egyptian artifact with an exhibit number 666. Shortly later, an entity known as Iwa supposedly dictated the Book of the Law to Crowley. The book expounds a magical path he called Thelemah, or will do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. Rose and Crowley had a daughter in July of 1904 whom Crowley named Nut Ma'ahathu or Hecate Sappho Jezebel Lilith Crowley. The child died in 1906 of typhoid, during the 2.5 months when Crowley had left her with Rose after a family trip through China. They had another daughter, Lola Zaza, in the summer of 1906. As an adult, Lola Zaza disowned her father. She died in 1990. One of the German secret societies controlled by Aleister Crowley was known as ODO, Ordo Templi Orientis. It was an international fraternal and religious circle said to be a 20th century reworked copy of the Bayern Illuminati. Crowley wanted to be a magician because he wanted power, biographer Colin Wilson wrote. One of his female admirers, Martha Kunzel, was quite right to see a close resemblance between Crowley and Hitler. Kunzel was a member of the ODO and the Nazi Party. She corresponded with Hitler on behalf of Crowley suggesting that Thelemah was the best choice for the national religion of the Third Reich. Hitler summoned an up-and-coming movie director named Leni Riefenstahl and asked her to film the entire week-long 1934 Nazi rally at Nuremberg. Riefenstahl's film of the Nuremberg rally bore the title personally chosen by Hitler, Triumph of the Will, and became one of the most commanding propaganda statements ever made. As a pseudo-religious movement, the Triumph of Thelemah became political gold, symbolizing the neo-pagan dynasty Hitler claimed would survive for 1,000 years. Triumph of the Will, Triumph des Willens, is a filmed record of the 1934 Nazi Party convention, in Nuremberg. No, it is more than just a record, it is an exaltation of Adolf Hitler, who from the moment his plane descends from Valhalla like clouds is visually characterized as a god on earth. The Jewish question is disposed of with a few fleeting close-ups. Filmmaker Leni Riefenstahl prefers to concentrate on cheering crowds, precision marching, military bands, and Hitler's climactic speech, all orchestrated, choreographed and illuminated on a scale that makes Griffith and DeMille look like poverty row directors. It has been alleged that the climactic rally, spontaneous Sieg Heils and all, was pre-planned according to Riefenstahl's specifications, the better to take full advantage of its cinematic potential. Allegedly, propaganda minister Joseph Goebbels resented the presence and intrusion of a woman director, but finally had to admit that her images, achieved through the use of 30 cameras and 120 assistants, were worth 1,000 speeches. Possibly the most powerful propaganda film ever made, Triumph of the Will is also, in retrospect, one of the most horrifying. Hal Erickson, Roe v., Triumph de Willens, Rotten Tomatoes. Triumph of the Will was composed like newsreels of fast-moving images featuring a cast of thousands. It openly revealed that Thelemic Law was in fact the deified Nazi belief. But, as Charlie Chaplin's 1940 movie The Great Dictator exposed, somewhere in the horde of more than 700,000 Nazi supporters also sat Hitler's double a scrounging lookalike getting ready to deliver a Führer's oration. In November 1899, occultist and author Aleister Crowley purchased Bowles Kynehouse in Foyers on the coast of Loch Ness in Scotland. He developed a love of Scottish culture, describing himself as the Laird of Bowles Kyne and took to wearing traditional Highland dress, even during visits to London. Built in the late 18th century, Bowles Kyne House was the manor estate of Aleister Crowley until 1913. A fierce blaze reduced most of Bowles Kyne House to rubble on December 23, 2015. Crowley purchased the home in order to abide by the grimoire rite found in the Book of the Sacred Magic of Abramelin the Mage. Crowley considered Bowles Kyne to be the Thelemic Qibla. This is an Arabic word that refers to the direction of Mecca, the holiest shrine of Islam. It has a slightly different premise in Thelema, as it is mentioned in a number of rituals written by Crowley where it is identified with the East. Bowles Kyne House is the omphalos or center of power for Thelema. The Gnostic Mass and Liber Reguli both identify the principal orientation, sometimes known as Magical East, as being towards Bowles Kyne. It is considered to be the focal point of the magical energies, also called the 93 current, of the Aeon of Horus. In Crowleyanity it is similar to Jerusalem and Mecca. From the early 1970s until 1991 famed Led Zeppelin guitarist and Aleister Crowley enthusiast, Jimmy Page, owned Bowles Kyne. Page's fantasy sequence in the Led Zeppelin concert film The Song Remains the Same was filmed at nighttime on the mountainside directly behind Bowles Kyne House. Page allegedly claimed that a severed head haunted the house. Jimmy Page sold the Bowles Kyne estate on the shore of Loch Ness in 1992. The Loch Ness Monster is supposedly a large unknown animal that inhabits Loch Ness in the Scottish Highlands. Popular interest and belief in the animal's existence has varied since it was first brought to the world's attention in 1933. Evidence of its existence is anecdotal, with minimal and much disputed photographic material and sonar readings. The most common guess among believers is that the animal represents a line of long-surviving plesiosaurs. In 2016, an ancient marine reptile plesiosaur, remaining in the ground for 165 million years, was excavated from a quarry in eastern England. In 2017, the University of Cambridge said dinosaurs perhaps originated in Scotland. The scientific community regards the Loch Ness Monster as a modern-day myth. Aleister Crowley allegedly unleashed the Loch Ness Monster when he failed to finish his difficult Abramelin ritual at Bowles Kyne House. He was summoned to London by Samuel Liddell MacGregor Mathers. His snarl-up was said to have set free a demon. For Crowley, Bowles Kyne House was a Thelemic Qibla, a magical East, where he could practice the Black Mass and summon demons. It is these demons which are believed by many to have caused the strange, monstrous disruption to the Loch. Crowley later stated in his autobiography. The spirits he summoned got out of hand, causing one housemaid to leave, and a workman to go mad. He also insinuates he was indirectly responsible for a local butcher accidentally severing an artery and bleeding to death. Crowley had written the names of some demons on a bill from the butcher's shop. Aleister Crowley and the Other Loch Ness Monster, 2000 film, is an engaging short documentary, directed by Gary S. Grant. It contains fine interviews with Kenneth Anger, Colin Wilson, Neil Oram, head of the UK OTO, John Bonner, and Mog Morgan. And the commentary is read by former Jesus of Nazareth, Robert Powell. Paul Gallagher, Aleister Crowley, How the Great Beast Unleashed the Loch Ness Monster, Dangerous Minds, June 20, 2013. The earliest report of a monster associated with the vicinity of Loch Ness appears in the Life of St. Columba by Edmonton, written in the 7th century. According to Edmonton, writing about a century after the events he described, the Irish monk St. Columba was staying in the land of the Picts with his companions when he came across the locals burying a man by the River Ness. They explained that the man had been swimming the river when he was attacked by a water beast that had mauled him and dragged him under. They tried to rescue him in a boat, but were able only to drag up his corpse. Hearing this, Columba stunned the Picts by sending his follower Luigne Macumin to swim across the river. The beast came after him, but Columba made the sign of the cross and commanded, "Go no further. Do not touch the man. Go back at once." The beast immediately halted as if it had been pulled back with ropes and fled in terror, and both Columba's men and the pagan Picts praised God for the miracle. Wikipedia.org. The Loch Ness Monster remains one of the most famous examples of cryptozoology. Since the 1940s, the legendary monster has been referred to by the nickname Nessie. In that day the Lord with his sore and great and strong sword shall punish Leviathan the piercing serpent, even Leviathan that crooked serpent, and he shall slay the dragon that is in the sea. Isaiah 27:1. On May 10, 1941, German Deputy Führer Rudolf Hess dramatically parachuted into Scotland. Shortly after 11 p.m. a Messerschmitt aircraft crashed at Bonython Farm near Eaglesham with an airman bailing out and landing at Flores Farm. David McLean, a local ploughman, ran out of his cottage at the rear of Flores Farm after hearing an aeroplane crashing and saw a parachutist coming down. McLean assisted the slightly injured airman back to his cottage. The airman, a German officer, identified himself as Captain Albert Horn. Captain Horn was arrested and subsequently turned out to be Deputy Reichsfuhrer, Rudolf Hess. Hess apparently claimed that he had flown to Scotland in an attempt to persuade the British government to restore peace, but in poor light mistook his intended destination of Dunghavel House near Strathaven as Eaglesham House. When Hess came down with his aircraft in Scotland, he gave a false name and asked to see the Duke of Hamilton. At the outbreak of war, the beast found himself caught up in further intrigue as the occult and espionage worlds collided. Ian Fleming, working for Naval Intelligence in MI5, contacted him with an outlandish plan to lure Rudolf Hess to Britain by using mystical enchantments and astrology. The details of this plot remain obscure, but Hess, a passionate devotee of the occult, did fly to Scotland, and Fleming was keen that Crowley should interrogate him using his magical knowledge. All that is certain about this curious episode is that Crowley provided Fleming with the template for L.E. Chiffer, the first Bond villain in Casino Royale, 1953. Jake Arnott, Aleister Crowley's Lives, The Satanist and Spy has inspired memorable characters, The Telegraph, May 30, 2009. The Duke of Hamilton was informed of the parachutist and visited the German prisoner in hospital. Hess then revealed his true identity for the first time, saying that he had met the Duke in 1936 when he was at the Olympic Games at Berlin. Hamilton without delay contacted Winston Churchill, and informed him of the Deputy Führer's arrival. British authorities imprisoned Hess until the end of the war and the later Nuremberg trials. In his book Hess, Hitler, and Churchill, 2013, Peter Padfield suggested that Hess was delivering a proposed peace treaty drawn up by Hitler under which Britain would retain her independence, empire, and armed forces, and Germany would withdraw from Western Europe. In return, Britain would take a neutral stance towards the planned German invasion of Russia. Padfield claimed that Churchill rejected this proposal because he was hopeful that the United States would join the war. Churchill also wanted to maintain his own domestic political position amid the existing alliance of exiled European governments. Was the Hess peace mission a Nazi-made attention grabber to appear as if the occultist Crowley had lured Hess to parachute onto the mountainside directly behind Bolzkein House, the historic property or Qibla of magic energies? But in the poor light, Hess mistook his intended destination and instead landed south of the Loch Ness. Even so, the deputy Führer just dropped by still struggling with his parachute to enlighten the British public that Crowleyanity was the new Nazi religion beyond doubt, while MI5 agent Ian Fleming and Thelema's Beast of Bolzkind proudly took cover behind a British mantle. Did spymasters enlist occultists in the propaganda war? Jake Arnott's novel House of Rumor, 2012, revealed an attention-grabbing and extraordinary tale of conspiracy and illusion. In Arnott's version of events, an operation mounted by British intelligence, under the control of future James Bond creator Ian Fleming, convinces Hess that there are enough Nazi sympathizers in Britain to make a personal outreach worthwhile. But Fleming also enlists the aid of the famed Aleister Crowley to convince Hess, through German astrologers, that mystical forces favor this venture. Charlie Jane Anders, in House of Rumor, Ian Fleming and Aleister Crowley Win World War II, io9.com, April 19, 2012. Before his flight from Germany, Hess had given his assistant, Karl-Heinz Pintz, a letter addressed to Hitler that detailed his intentions to open peace negotiations with the British. Pintz delivered the letter to the Führer at the Berghof around noon on May 11, 1941. American journalist H.R. Knickerbocker, who knew both Hitler and Hess, thought that the Führer had sent Rudolf Hess to deliver a message informing Winston Churchill of the forthcoming invasion of the Soviet Union, and offering a negotiated peace or even an anti-Bolshevik partnership. Soviet leader Joseph Stalin believed that the British had engineered Hess's flight. Fleming's MI5 input was talked about. Stalin persisted in this belief as late as 1944, when he mentioned the matter to Winston Churchill, who insisted that the British had no advance warning of Hess's bailout. MI5 intelligence agent Fleming was trying to involve Aleister Crowley in the effort to interrogate the captured Nazi Rudolf Hess, who had landed in Britain during World War II. Having been fascinated by Crowley's image for years, Fleming had devised, and spymaster Maxwell Knight had approved, a plan in which Crowley could exploit Hess's interests in the occult. Knight headed up Department 5, the counter-espionage unit within MI5. Crowley corresponded that he would be ready to assist. Douglas Chapman, The Mystical James Bond, Strange Magazine. Ian Fleming's biographer John Pearson confirmed that Crowley actually did write a brief letter offering his service to Ian Fleming, who at that time was working for MI5 as a chief of naval intelligence. Astrologer Frown H. Nast was used to set May 10 for Hess to fly. Sir. If it is true that Herr Hess is much influenced by astrology and magic, my services might be of use to the department in case he should not be willing to do what you wish. I have the honor to be, sir, your obedient servant. Aleister Crowley. According to author Greg Hallett, Fleming took over command of Operation Winnie the Pooh, a mission to rescue Adolf and Eva Hitler out of Berlin in the spring of 1945. Hallett said the English intelligence service, during the Russian siege of Berlin in two coordinated operations, rescued both Hitler and his nearest man Martin Bormann, from getting into Russian captivity. Anthony Blunt, the illegitimate son of King George V, was a member of the rescue party. As he had refused to attend the training for OP Winnie the Pooh, and also was a Russian spy, it was necessary to keep secret the real purpose of the operation, from the rescue party. The aim of the Russians was not only to get their hands on Berlin, but also on Hitler's person. Describing Ian Fleming's maze-like removal of the Führer out of Berlin, Hallett suspiciously reported more than one Hitler corpse, then, at 1:00 a.m. May 1, 1945, five Hitler doubles were shot with state-sanctioned 10.5mm bullets on top of the bunker. Yet another Hitler double had been killed 10 hours earlier down below and carried outside for burning. This one is commonly referred to as the dead Hitler. As counteragents of the Gestapo and female test pilot Hannah Reich geared up for the rescue, The dead body of Hitler then waited for a day and a half, most likely packed in ice, in a mini-sub. Hallett said that Fleming, dressed as a Russian officer, remained at Lake Müggelsee east of Berlin while his party rescued the Führer. Fleming only ever referred to Adolf and Eva Hitler as Mr. Rabbit and Mrs. Rabbit. According to Hallett, British agent John Ainsworth Davis helped Martin Bormann escape to England under another identity, and to Paraguay where he died in 1959. Bormann's DNA was in a skull dug up in Berlin in 1972. Concerned that his Axis cronies, such as the Italians and the Japanese, would perceive Rudolf Hess's bailout as an endeavor by Germany to secretly open peace negotiations with the British, Hitler ordered that radio broadcasts of the event should dispense with Hess as a delusional lunatic acting without any authority. The Führer initiated Action Hess, a short episode of hundreds of arrests of astrologers, faith healers, and occultists that took place around June 9, 1941. The purge was part of a party-line course of action by the Third Reich to defame Hess and to make scapegoats of occult practitioners, such as esotericist Rudolf Steiner and Swiss astrologer Karl Kraft. Some members of the government, including Göring and propaganda minister Joseph Goebbels, thought this only made matters worse, because if Rudolf Hess were truly sick, he should not have been holding a chief government rank. Action Hess sent out a strong subliminal warning notice that an occultist, example Aleister Crowley, had illicitly manipulated Germany from behind the scenes. Had Deputy Reichsfuhrer Rudolf Hess parachuted just above the Qibla of Bolzkein House, called the Omphalos of the Aeon of Horus, perhaps the British public would have reacted in a different way. Discerning that the Third Reich was being stage-managed by their own idyllic Beast 666, maybe the English would have danced in the streets. Perhaps their school children would have presented flowers to Nazi soldiers. But probably not. The Hess peace mission totally backfired. At the end of World War II, Germany unleashed terrifying new weapons on London and other cities, the V-1 flying bomb and the supersonic V-2 rocket. No one was in the 18th century Bolzkein mansion when it was gutted on the eve of a rare Christmas full cold moon. An alleged arson blaze on December 25, 2015 similarly damaged Bill Clinton's birthplace, a National Historic Site in Hope, Arkansas. Probably nobody knows what it's like to live under the hereditary decree of a Germanic authority, royal family, more than the British people do. Although English royalty such as the Duke of Saxe-Coburg and Gotha totally supported the Nazis, the everyday British people would not. Questions were asked in the House of Commons. The English general public judged Triumph of the Will as an awfully creepy movie. Rudolf Hess was either a madman or a decoy. Aleister Crowley was the wickedest man in the world and a man we'd like to hang, according to John Bull magazine. Rudolf Hess was tried as a war criminal at Nuremberg, where an international military tribunal found him guilty on two counts of concerted plan or conspiracy and crimes against peace. He ended his life, since 1966 the only inmate, in Spandau Prison, Berlin. Hess died on August 17, 1987 at the age of 93 in a summer house that had been set up in the prison garden as a reading room. He took an extension cord from one of the lamps, strung it over a window latch, and hanged himself. Death occurred by asphyxiation. A short note to his family, thanking them for all they had done, was found in his pocket. The Four Powers released a statement on September 17, 1987, ruling the death a suicide. Spandau Prison was demolished to prevent it from becoming a Nazi shrine. His lawyer, Dr. Seidel, said Hess was too old and frail to have managed to kill himself. Several conspiracy theories soon arose concerning Rudolf Hess's death. His son, Wolf Rudiger Hess, claimed that his father had been murdered by the British Secret Intelligence Service to prevent him from revealing information about British misconduct during the war. According to W. Hugh Thomas's book The Murder of Rudolf Hess, 1979, the real Hess was murdered in 1941 and an imposter flew to Scotland, was tried at Nuremberg and was incarcerated in Spandau. Abdullah Meluai, who served as Hess's medical orderly from 1982 to 1987, wrote a book on a similar conspiracy and was dismissed from his position. A report released in 2012 raised the question of whether Rudolf Hess was murdered. Historian Peter Padfield claimed the suicide note found on the body appeared to have been written when Hess was hospitalized in 1969. According to an investigation by the British government in 1989, the available evidence did not back up the claim that Hess was murdered. Solicitor General Sir Nicholas Lyell saw no grounds for further investigation. Conspiracy theorists said a political decoy was used as part of an intelligence plot to deflect attention away from the real Rudolf Hess. Drive W. Hugh Thomas was a British military surgeon who was stationed at Spandau and treated Hess there. Thomas based his book primarily on the supposition that there was no scar recorded during the autopsy from the bullet wound Hess sustained in his chest in 1917. Hess himself had noted the torso scar in a 1979 letter to his wife. The reason for Rudolf Hess's flight was presumably to meet with the Duke of Hamilton and plot a secret peace treaty that would lead to the supremacy of Germany within Europe and the reinforcement of the British Empire without. The Duke said he did not recognize the Deputy Führer. But Hamilton came under pressure from the press to explain his role in the affair, with suspicions being raised that he might have been in prior contact with Hess. The 2002 book, Double Standards: The Rudolf Hess Cover-Up, by Lynn Picknett, Clive Prince, and Stephen Pryor disclosed the British Peace Party that Hess had come to meet. Based on new material from eyewitnesses, it revealed that members of the royal family itself whose involvement in the Hess affair had been conveniently airbrushed out of history were at the heart of this group. Churchill was in a very, very insecure position politically in May 1941. In fact, 3 days before Hess arrived, there had been a vote of no confidence in Churchill. He didn't have the support of the aristocracy or the support of MI6 and the King. But the Hess affair basically gave Churchill the opportunity to blackmail his opponents who were involved with the Hess flight into supporting him. It made his position secure, and he made veiled hints and threats in the House of Commons where he would drop Hess's name in. It was like, back me or I'll tell the full story. He also used the Hess flight to ensure that Hitler went ahead with his attack on Russia 6 weeks after Hess arrived. He also used it to worry the Americans that a deal was about to be done and to get Roosevelt to increase his support and ensure that the Great Triple Alliance happened. Interviews, Double Standards, I Spy magazine. The SS leader Heinrich Himmler reportedly committed suicide in Allied custody on May 23, 1945 by ingesting poison from a capsule concealed in his mouth. W. Hugh Thomas said that MI6's most accomplished secret agent Kim Philby was unconvinced by the tale of Himmler's suicide. Yet in 1946 MI6's most talented, if treacherous, agent, Kim Philby, was still not convinced that the story of Himmler's death made any sense at all. Philby realized that a man of Himmler's organizational genius, a plotter of great intricacy and sophistication who recognized Germany's inevitable defeat as early as 1943, was unlikely to have just blundered into the arms of the Allies. The use of political decoys was key to W. Hugh Thomas's doppelganger theory as to what might have happened in the Berlin bunker during the Führer's last days. Accessing previously top-secret material from the archives of the Soviet authorities that captured Berlin and first investigated the deaths, Dr. Thomas offered an extraordinary view of the climactic events and deliberate deceptions that began in April and May 1945 surrounding Adolf Hitler's Berlin bunker. Since the end of World War II, it has become widely accepted that Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun died together in a suicide pact as Soviet armies entered Berlin. The man whose monstrous ambitions began the war did not sign the German surrender, nor was he brought to justice at the Nuremberg trials. Instead, the Allies were presented with a set of charred remains, mysteriously missing one foot. Next to him was the body, also burned, of a woman wrapped in one of Eva Braun's dresses. Although the woman had died from shrapnel wounds to the chest, a capsule containing cyanide had been placed in her mouth and forcibly broken. Her jaw was then closed. It was supposed to look like suicide. It was supposed to be Eva Braun. It was neither. Investigations into secret agent Crowley's espionage exploits reached a high point in the Second World War. Aleister Crowley's peculiar contribution to pro-German propaganda became a well-known embarrassment for England. He considered himself to be an expert impersonator and master of disguise, not for entertainment purposes but as security to the corps diplomatique. Photos circulated of Aleister Crowley impersonating Winston Churchill in the late 1930s. Crowley claimed he invented the famous V for Victory sign. The Eagle Has Landed, 1976, with Michael Caine, Donald Sutherland, Robert Duvall, and Jenny Agutter, is a film directed by John Sturges that reveals a German plot to kidnap Winston Churchill involving an impersonator at the height of World War II. A Crowley MI5 incident concerned a special unit that was created to monitor the movements of carrier pigeons using the expertise of Lord Tredegar, a falconer, whose birds of prey were sent in pursuit of suspected spy pigeons, the Falcon Unit. The question of Nazi pigeons was taken seriously enough to launch a pigeon deception plan over the English Channel during the German advance into Belgium and France. The object of this exercise was to confuse the enemy by filling the sky with pigeons. It was mentioned by Nigel West in his 1981 book MI5, British Security Service Operations 1909-1945. Lord Tredegar, an old Etonian Welshman, had been somewhat indiscreet after lunching with Lady Baden-Powell and actually gave her a guided tour of his office, as well as describing how he was engaged in the destruction of Nazi carrier pigeons. When word leaked of Tredegar's lapse, he was taken into custody at the Tower of London but released soon afterwards when MI5 intervened. This, however, was not the last of the affair. Tredegar was outraged by his arrest and threatened dire consequences. He retired to his country seat, Tredegar Park in South Wales, and invited Aleister Crowley, the renowned occultist and magician, to prepare a spell. Coincidentally or otherwise, Tredegar's arresting officer fell painfully ill shortly afterwards and nearly died. British Society biographer William Cross said Crowley's spell at the request of Lord Tredegar was just a made-up rumour. According to the biographer of Evan Morgan, Lord Tredegar, Crowley's diaries speak of the great beast seeing Evan's magic room. A more serious MI5 episode concerned Maxwell Knight, the head of British intelligence. Charles Henry Maxwell Knight thrived on the intrigue and greatly enjoyed the trappings of counter-espionage. Different agents knew him simply as M, later made famous in the James Bond novels. His secretary Joan Miller compiled long lists of British people who were Nazi sympathizers. Knight joined MI5 in 1924 and had recruited agents in every walk of life. According to author Christopher Andrews in Secret Service, The Making of the British Intelligence Community, 1985, Knight also had for a time a rather disturbing interest in the occult, going with Dennis Wheatley to seances by the notorious Satanist Aleister Crowley to research black magic for Wheatley's novels. Maxwell Knight's first wife Gladys Poole committed suicide after a satanic fling with Aleister Crowley. A similar account was described by Anthony Masters in his book The Man Who Was M, 1984. It was becoming painfully clear to some officials that Aleister Crowley had more or less penetrated the heart of the British intelligence community. John Baker White, director of the Economic League between 1926 and 1939, later wrote that he had been recruited to run Section D of a private intelligence agency operated by a Sir George McGill. According to White, McGill's agency investigated all forms of subversion including communism, the international traffic in drugs and the traffic in women and children. And the cult of evil which Aleister Crowley was the center. Scotland Yard was concerned by the fact that several disputed deaths were indirectly being connected to Aleister Crowley. He always claimed that dark, avenging spirits were protecting him from his magical adversaries, causing illness and accident. For instance, Crowley met the famous dancer Isadora Duncan at a party and dined with her pianist. On September 14, 1927, Duncan was a passenger in an open-air car of the French-Italian mechanic Benoit Falchetto in Nice, France. Her silk scarf draped around her neck became entangled around the spoked wheels and rear axle, hurling her from the car and breaking her neck. George McGill and other inspectors perhaps saw the common pattern of a serial killer emerging in Crowley's sinister attitude to the tragic deaths of those around him. Before Scotland Yard could lawfully seize occultist Aleister Crowley, the Quaker Ale inheritor, who had once before faked his own death, declared bankruptcy, became a drug addict, and reportedly died of bronchitis in the bleak Netherwood boarding house on December 1, 1947. He was immediately cremated. When the authorities arrived to investigate, they found that Crowley's satanic disciples had broken into a Brighton chapel and staged a black mass rite that got caught up in the defilement of the chapel. Crowley's heroin doctor died a few hours later. Ashes in occultist Carl Germer's New Jersey garden were the cited remains of the great beast. The firstborn of the Illuminati was the engineered progeny of artificial donor insemination. Scientists, politicians, and nobility had spawned the lost prince from a female Quaker at a medical laboratory to advance human eugenics. He deeply admired monarchism once he matured with the assurance that since 1714 the kingdom's crown had been Germanish. In his belief, he was the self-direction of all human progress, the marvel of the 20th century. The Horus incarnation was a smart hairless gentleman. One of his heads looked as if it had been mortally wounded, but his deadly wound was healed. And the military-industrial complex marveled and followed the beast. His footfalls were noisy as he walked.